from KQED.
Support for the California Report comes from Wharton San Francisco's Executive MBA program, delivering a rigorous academic experience immersed in the unique Bay Area ecosystem and access to a globally connected network. wharton.upenn.edu. The California Endowment, working to achieve health and justice for all. Learn more at calendow.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.
On today's California Report magazine, President Trump has talked a lot about privatization of healthcare, prisons, schools, even air traffic control. But one California town is paying a steep price for privatizing their water system.
I'm hungry. You know why I'm hungry? I paid $174 the other day for my water bill. I live on $1,000 a month. I don't have money for food.
And a long-forgotten recording from a Central Valley gospel group finds new life in an Oscar-winning film.
It's great that somebody besides the local folks here recognize it. It gets to be some broader recognition.
Plus, our StoryCorps series continues with a heartfelt chat between a mother and a daughter about being first.
You were the first one to kind of work out of the home, a female in your family, and you were the only female to even learn how to drive.
I'm Susie Rocho, in for Sasha Coca, and this is the California Report magazine. President Trump has vowed to bolster the country's oil industry. Oil companies in California have cheered that, but it's not clear how much Trump can actually help them. There are global forces at work, and many state lawmakers have vowed to fight the president. The majority of the state's oil comes from Kern County in the Central Valley, so KQED science reporter Lauren Summer went for a visit.
Chad Hathaway's low point came 1 year ago. Actually, not just for him, for a lot of people he knows.
We hurt as a community. A lot of people suffered.
Hathaway owns a small oil company here in Bakersfield. Driving around in his pickup, you can't miss how big oil is here. There are oil wells on the main streets of town.
People are close. We are a family, and we stick together. And when part of the family hurts, everybody feels it.
That hurt came from a number, $26. It's how much a barrel of oil was selling for last winter, a quarter of what it was 3 years ago. But Hathaway has a determined streak. He cut pay and rode out the downturn, and in December, drilled some new oil wells and hired a few people.
I had one of the roughnecks come up to me and said, you know what, just my family just having a job at Christmas time meant a lot to us. And so that's meaningful.
And that's what it came down to on Election Day, when Hathaway filled out his ballot.
If you ask me what the biggest reason why I vote for Trump is because they forgot the middle class. But they've completely forgot those guys that are out there working on that rig.
And as we're driving, with weirdly perfect timing, this song comes on the radio.
Just a bunch of square cornfields and wheat farms, man, it all looks the same.
Like, I don't know if you heard a song, Jason Aldean with Flyover States.
Yeah, Jason Aldean, Flyover States.
Who's gonna live down there in the middle of nowhere?
It's like the people from LA to San Francisco, they fly over this area all the time. They just probably see all these farm fields and they can't see the oil wells, but they don't realize that, you know, what we do to keep this state moving on a daily basis.
70% of California's oil production is in Kern County. It also produces a lot of the solar power.
I have a lot of solar. I'm a huge solar guy. If it makes sense, I'll do it. I am not stupid.
Hathaway says his Bay Area family doesn't get this part of the state or his support for Trump.
They just don't understand. How are we so dumb down here to think that, you know, this guy's going to actually do something for us? Well, nobody else was doing it for us before.
So I ask Hathaway, does he think Trump will do something for California's oil industry?
Not really. No.
And there are two reasons why. First, what really matters to oil companies is the price of oil. And that's controlled by global market forces that go far beyond what President Trump can do. And the second reason?
90% of my problems are with Sacramento.
Hathaway says not all environmental regulations are bad, but some hit his bottom line. So he was glad to see Trump get rid of a rule about air pollution from oil and gas wells. Nonetheless, California has its own version of that rule, so Hathaway won't see much of a difference. But other people here in Kern County are feeling more optimistic, like Les Clark.
We're in a good mood.
Clark has been in oil since 1965, and we meet up in Taft, a small town west of Bakersfield that was built around oil. And in these parts, I'm saying that word wrong.
Ah, no, that ain't gonna work. You gotta say oil.
Clark's granddaughter is playing in the Friday night basketball game here at the high school. He knows almost everyone.
What's up?
How
are
we doing?
Well, you're trying to pick my brain. It's only taken about 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Clark says the federal government controls some rules, like how the oil industry deals with its wastewater. So he thinks the Trump administration could loosen that up.
I think it's going to help us, yes. You know, a lot of those guys, they understand that some of these regulations are very onerous.
But California lawmakers have said they plan to fight every inch of backsliding on environmental rules. That push and pull is what Clark and others here in Kern County are watching. They're waiting to see if Trump's victory in November is actually a victory for them. For the California Report, I'm Lauren Summer in Taft.
Did we win?
We did.
All right, cool. I thought we did. I heard a big cheer going on in there.
Next, we head to a town called Lucerne in Lake County. President Trump has proposed privatization as the best strategy for fixing the country's infrastructure. Well, in California, some communities have already privatized their drinking water systems. And as reporter Audrey Dilling explains, that hasn't turned out so well for Lucerne.
Lucerne is a small town about 3 hours north of San Francisco. It's tucked between a lake and some mountains, and the welcome sign calls it the Switzerland of America. But David Cruz has a different nickname for the place.
Welcome to the more expensive water in the whole United States.
David and his wife, Lorena Cruz, are standing in their front yard. It's mostly concrete and dirt.
Could you read me what's on your shirt?
Flat, broke, daughter in college.
Are you both working?
Yes, sir. I'm semi-retired, but I can afford to pay the water bill.
Do you think you have a recent water bill that you could show me?
Let me check. Okay, let me check.
Lorena Cruz heads inside the house to try to find it.
Got these doggies, and they're small, but they are very loud.
Hey, Mita! No!
Let me get him in, okay? So this is my water bill.
Oh my goodness, okay. Could you read me the amount?
This is for 2 months, and I have to pay $712.70. This is my water bill.
2 months of water costs the average American household about $240. The Cruz family is paying three times that. And Lorena Cruz says her family of five does not waste water.
Well, dishes are done once a day.
They only do laundry every 2 weeks and take short showers. Now, these habits might sound familiar, but this story is not about the drought. The Cruises are conserving water because they can't afford not to, rain or shine. Same goes for their neighbors, like Steve Theodore, who lives around the corner. I caught him doing something he says he rarely does, washing his car to get ready for a special trip.
Otherwise, and stuff, we just leave our cars dirty because we can't afford to wash them.
Theodore is a retired veteran on a fixed income, like a lot of his neighbors. Lucerne's population skews mostly older and white, and many people live below the poverty line. But Theodorf remembers more prosperous times.
During the summer, it was just wall-to-wall tourists. We had probably 5 hotels in this town.
All closed.
The water is what killed the businesses.
Like a Thai restaurant that closed up shop and reopened in another town just a couple miles down the road, where water bills are lower. So how does a town get priced out by its water? Lucerne's water comes from nearby Clear Lake, but at least on this visit, it doesn't quite live up to the name.
And I think muskrats get up on our pier and go to the bathroom, so watch your stuff.
The lake is teeming with green algae. Water like this needs a lot of treatment. And when the current water company in Lucerne took over about 15 years ago, the health department told them the treatment system then wasn't up to the job.
You simply cannot operate a system that does not provide safe drinking water to customers.
Paul Townsley is with California Water Services, or Cal Water for short. He says they had no choice but to upgrade the treatment plant.
You take that cost,
about $7 million,
and you divide it by the number of customers here,
about 1,800 households, footing a huge bill,
and you have the issue that we have today.
Cal Water is one of the largest private water companies in the West. So customers in Lucerne are paying back investors that front the money for these projects. You might even be one of those investors if you've got a retirement fund. Some major funds invest in Cal Water.
But some of them are making money off of these people, right?
An investor in a company like Cal Water is investing in infrastructure. The money has to come from somewhere.
If it were a public company, that money would come from bonds, Townsley says. But people vote on bonds. The residents of Lucerne, they don't get a vote.
Good afternoon. This is the public participation hearing in application, the application of California Water Service Company.
They only get one chance every 3 years to plead their case at this public hearing with the California Public Utilities Commission.
I'm hungry. You know why I'm hungry? I paid $174 the other day for my water bill. I live on $1,000 a month. I don't have money for food.
Lucerne resident Eileen Turner.
Here's a conversation I overheard the other day. I heard a girl say, I've got some drugs to sell. I need to pay my water bill.
After the hearing, the water company agreed to consolidate Lucerne's costs with other nearby water districts. That brings the monthly water bill for people like Eileen Turner down from three times the national average to double what most Americans pay for their water. For the California Report, I'm Audrey Dilling in Lucerne.
That story was produced with support from the UC Berkeley 11th Hour Food and Farming Fellowship. Now, have you ever created something, a piece of music, a drawing, a story, and then forgotten about it, only to have someone else find it years later and give it new life? Well, reporter Alice Daniel brings us this story of a gospel group from Fresno whose 40-year-old recording has been rediscovered in a very big way.
The Witness of Jesus Christ Church is a plain white building with few windows and a sign attached to the front that says, Jesus Saves. Inside, a small congregation sways to a song. Sixty-year-old Leonard Sanders leads the singers on his keyboard. He and his six siblings pretty much grew up right here. After all, Dad was the pastor for four decades. Sanders learned to play piano by ear. There were no songbooks.
Pentecostal church, it's like anybody can get up and sing any song they want to in any key at any time, and you got to be able to catch them, you know.
Any key, as long as it was church music. Sanders wasn't allowed to listen to secular tunes.
Change, change, change. Change, change.
But curiosity got the better of him.
I can remember going to bed with the radio to my ear. Once my parents went to sleep, I'm listening to Aretha Franklin, the OJs, and, you know, all everything that came on the radio. Because I was just intrigued with music, you know.
As a teenager, he wrote songs, and in 1978, he joined a gospel group, the Supreme Jubilees, made up of his brothers and cousins. You're hearing the title track of their self-released album, It'll All Be Over. The band recorded it here in Fresno with a studio engineer who liked country and western and argued there was too much bass in the mix.
And he was, I know what I'm doing. I don't need your input. And so my cousin Joe was like, yeah, but we, you know, we want a little bit more bass.
More bass than the engineer could handle. He kicked them out before the Supreme Jubilees could record the rest of the album.
It'll all be over, and we won't have to cry no more.
They took it to a new studio, and once the vinyl was pressed, the eight-member band piled into Sanders' old van and struck out for Texas. They sold their records at concerts, but the promoter lied about the money they'd get. The trip wore them down, and they split up. Sanders started another group. Now, decades later, It'll All Be Over has been resurrected. The LP was re-released in 2015 after a record collector in Texas pushed its revival.
You're not gonna tell me what your name is?
It found its way to the creators of the Oscar-winning film, Moonlight.
How about where you live?
And well-known Fresno rapper, Fashawn, sampled the title track on Just Remember Now.
We ain't gonna have to cry no more.
It's gonna be all right. It's gonna be all right. Come here, come here.
It'll all
make this greater later.
Sanders' brother Melvin, who sings backup on the LP, says it's nice to see his brother finally get some credit.
He's a committed, dedicated writer, and it's great that somebody besides the local folks here recognize that it gets to be some broader recognition.
Meanwhile, you can hear another song from the record on the recent movie Louder Than Bombs.
Is there a question in your mind today? If God is real, or isn't just hearsay?
Sanders sang all the vocal tracks on Do You Believe? As for all the recognition he's getting these days, well, none of it is a really big deal to him. Leonard Sanders says he'll just keep singing in his church. For the California Report, I'm Alice Daniel in Fresno.
People just don't believe that he's coming back one day.
Every month, I sit down with our music reviewers to chat about some notable new releases coming from California artists. Today, it's Steve Hockman's turn in the hot seat. He covers pop music for the California Report and KPCC, and today, the focus is on SoCal. With a sultry single from Kara and the Lesbians, a return to recording for Spiral Stairs, and this, an emotional album filled with social commentary from Quetzal. That's from the new album, The Eternal Get Down, by East LA band Quetzal. The band's been together since 1994. But tell me about this new album. It's their seventh. And, you know, with a group that's had such a long trajectory, has had, you know, many members, what sounds fresh to you on this record?
Well, there's a lot. There's a lot happening here. It sort of incorporates everything they've done in their whole career. That song we just heard, Toro Ayotzinapa, is kind of a rocked-up jarocho song, taking the traditional elements and applying it to a kind of modern context. And the subject matter is really serious. It's about the 43 students who were killed in Iguala, Guerrero in 2014 in a drug cartel slaughter. Martha Gonzalez puts herself in the position of the mothers, completely taken with this grief.
And reading the liner notes for The Eternal Get Down, you know, there's extensive notes on every song. You know, every song has deep meaning. And, you know, they even throw in a mention of Parliament Funkadelic. I mean, do you see the connection or influence there?
Maybe I should actually read the line on the liner notes by Deborah Vargas. And it's, if indigenous African ancestors of the Americas boarded Parliament's mothership, the soundtrack for this journey would be The Eternal Get Down. There are some interludes, these sort of ambient instrumental interludes that kind of take traditional sounds way off into space. But there's also some real traditional elements that are played fairly straight. There's some sort of folk rock stuff. There's some hardcore kind of urban funk. One of the most sort of East LA sounding songs on this is called Unbound, Sueltos. It's sung in English, talking about building and planting and laying a foundation of movements so they will last. And that's what Quetzal is all about.
Just keep moving, instead of underground, like Sojourner, I see the truth. Can't you hear that sweet? It's a siren of freedom calling. Voices once drowned, remembering their song. Determined and unbound in this motion. No pause, no permission, no ankle chains or submission.
That's Quetzal. Their album is The Eternal Get Down. And up next, new music from Spiral Stairs.
There's a moth coming up. Let's call it June.
That's Scott Canberg, also known as Spiral Stairs, from his first record in 8 years, Doris and the Daggers. And Canberg was one of the founders of the Stockton band Pavement. But why did it take so long?
He's put out a few albums on his own. This is the second one under the name Spiral Stairs. The first one came out in 2009. And Pavement was doing reunions around that time. And then he just sort of, he and his wife just picked up and moved to the country of Australia, out in the countryside, and then had a kid. And he kind of got out of making music. And it wasn't until he moved back to California that he really felt he could make a record again.
Come into my room.
There's definitely an emotional vibe on this album.
There really is, not to be trite about it, a heart to this album. One of the songs, The Unconditional, it's a love note to his daughter.
She came out sideways, her head tilted just so. And when the nurse found out what I was to call her, I knew it was time to go.
That Spiral Stairs, the new album is Doris and the Daggers. And I know you wanted to mention a single before we go, right? Somebody you saw recently?
Yeah, you know, I love it when I just stumble upon somebody as an opening act or whatever who I've never heard of and I'm completely taken with them. That happened just the other day with a band based in L.A. called Kara and the Lesbians. From the first note, I'm going like, there's something extra going on here, something special, but there's also something familiar, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it until they did a version of Roy Orbison's Crying, and I went, that's it.
One thing I know.
There's this drama and the emotion and the depth and the sense of being today's outsiders. They've put out a couple things in the past on Bandcamp, of an album last year. There may be an album coming in the future, another one. For the time being, we'll go with I'm Late, which is this really cool song, and it definitely plays to the Orbison influence.
Steve Hockman is the California Report's pop music critic. You can read more about Kara and the Lesbians, Spiral Stairs, and Quetzal at californiareport.org. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Susie.
And we end today's show with our ongoing StoryCorps series, which focuses on conversations between Latinos in the San Joaquin Valley. This week, we hear from Kathleen Lozano and her mom, Doris Ceballos, who describes what it was like growing up with 10 siblings in the small town of Malaga, just 6 miles outside of Fresno.
Why don't you tell me how many people were in your family?
There were 11 children in our family, 6 boys and 5 girls.
And where did your parents come from?
They came from the old country, Mexico, from Guanajuato, Mexico.
They pretty much settled in California and primarily there in Malaga. What was Malaga like?
It was very small, smaller than it is now. There were no street lights. The families were large, mainly Mexican families.
So I know that some of the older brothers and sisters, they had to work to help the family. So many of them couldn't continue their education. But I know you actually got to go to high school. How many of you got to go to high school?
Just the two of us, myself and my sister.
You got an opportunity to work at the general store there in Malaga. And how did that come about?
Well, I had just graduated from high school, and I had my diploma, of course. And we traded there. We went to that store for almost everything, and they needed help. And because I was bilingual, the owner told me if I was interested in working there. And I says, well, I'll have to speak with my dad. And he says, well, it's okay with me if that's what you want to do.
Wow. So what were you going to do at the store? What was he hiring you to do?
I was to be a clerk, a cashier, postal clerk, and an interpreter.
Tell me some of the things you used to do for them, most of them being the Mexican people in town.
People would get their mail, and of course, if it was in English, they did not know how to read it. I would translate what the mail read. A lot of them were from the old country, and then some were from their loved ones that were in the service.
Yeah.
And that was sad because they would start crying, you know, when they got their letters. And they would be so grateful, you know, that I had read the letter, that they would bring a piece of fruit and give me a piece of fruit or a candy bar. They were so grateful and thankful. I would say, you don't need to do that. And they said, I want to.
Yeah. I just think for someone being that young with that much responsibility, I think an awful lot of you, Mom. And I'm so proud of you and everything that you've accomplished. You were the first one to kind of work out of the home, a female in your family. And you were the only female to even learn how to drive. And you're this small, petite lady. A lot of times when people see you, they may think that you're very timid. But I always thought of you as being very strong. And I'm so thankful that I have you. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you, honey.
That conversation between Kathleen Lozano and her mother, Doris Ceballos, is part of a project with the Henry Madden Library at Fresno State. It was produced by the California Report with interviews recorded by StoryCorps, a national nonprofit whose mission is to preserve and share humanity's stories in order to build connections between people and create a more just and compassionate world. This project was co-sponsored by Fresno State's Office of the President, the College of Arts and Humanities, the College of Social Sciences, and Valley Public Radio. And that's the California Report Magazine, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our technical producer is Seal Muller, with additional engineering from Katie McMurrin. Our team includes Laura Clivens, David Marks, Ryan Levy, Victoria Malion, Eli Warshafter, Lacey Jane Roberts, Kat Snow, Ingrid Becker, Ethan Lindsay, and Holly Kernan. I'm Susie Racho. Sasha Coca returns next week. Thanks for listening. This is the California Report Magazine.
Support for the California Report comes from the James Irvine Foundation. With information about the 2018 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards available at irvine.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.